this week's parsha. This parsha's Perach. Ayikach Perach ben Yitzhar ben Kohos ben Levi. Perach, who was the descendant of Yitzhar, Kohos of Levi, generation after generation, it goes back, not all the way back. It doesn't say Ben Yaakov, as is noted, and Dasan and Aviram, known Ben Pelas. They arose before Moshe of Anashim ibn Yisrael Chamishim u'Masayim, men of the Jewish people, 250. Chazal say these were firstborn. These were all leaders of the community. And they assembled against Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. Their assembly was against both Moshe and Aaron. Vayamru alehem, and they said to them, Rab lochem, you have taken much for yourselves. Ki cholo eida kulam kedoshim. The entire community is holy. Uvesoicham Hashem. And Hashem is in their midst. Umadu atis nasu al kal Hashem. Why do you lift up yourselves over the community of Hashem? Moshe Rabbeinu was the Navi, the leader, the one who communicated the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people. Aaron HaKohen was the Kohen Gadol, who represented the Jewish people in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Two most significant spiritual personalities in the Jewish people. And the Bnei Korach, and his group, and Dasan and Aviram, etc., were challenging this. Why should you lift yourselves up over the entire community of Hashem? Ki cholei the kulam kedoshim. Rashi says that when they said cholei the kulam kedoshim, kulam shamu dvarim b'sinai mipi agvura. Every one of them heard the words at Sinai from the mouth of Hashem. They're all neviim. Loyatem levadchem shematem b'sinai anochi Hashem elokecha. Kolei the shamu. You're not the only ones who heard at Sinai. I am Hashem your God. We all heard. The whole community heard. Umadu atisnasu. Why do you lift yourselves up? Im lokachto ata malchus, if you took for yourself the crown of royalty, Moshe Rabbeinu is sometimes referred to as the king of his time of the Jewish people. Vayhi bishurun melech. Some understand it refers to God. Others understand it refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, on some level, was like the king of the Jewish people. But why did you give your brother then the kuhuna as well? Why are you keeping it so closely in the family? Rashi brings further in the parsha, Niskavet Niskane Amasiusoi Shel Elitzafan Ben Uziel, the prince of the tribe of Levi was Elitzafan Ben Uziel, and he said it's not right, it should have at least have gone to the family of Yitzhar. Right, Amram was first, Yitzhar was second, Uziel was the youngest. Why are you giving it to him, to his descendants? Why didn't you give it to us? So this is the story of Korach. I mean, we know how the story continues. It's a complex story with different layers. They're attacking Moshe and they're attacking Aaron. There is Korach who is attacking, together with the Bnei Levi. There's Dasan and Aviram, and the 250 others, which usually we associate with an attack from the Bechayrim, from the firstborns. And Dasan and Aviram and Ein Ben Peles were all from the family of Reuven. Reuven was the Bechar, who lost his Bechayra as an individual. The Bechayrim in general, the firstborn in general, lost their status to the Levian, and they're joining forces with the Levian. They're joining forces with the Levian. Chazal point out that Reuven's camp was in the south, and it was right next to the camp of Kohos, right? And that was where Korach was, and that's how they ended up joining together. There's this alliance between these different people. Some have more, some have less. The Levim have, the Bechayrim don't have. When Moshe Rabbeinu speaks, he says to Korach, Rav lochem b'nei Levi, why isn't it enough for you, b'nei Levi? Isn't it enough that Hashem has separated you and made you different than everybody else? So you have these different people who are coming together, these different disgruntled groups. The Korach is by far the leader of this, and the Korach is the one whose name is carried not only conventionally by the Parsha, but in what this Parsha is about. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos speaks about machlokas, it speaks about argument, division, and it gives us the quintessential example of machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim, argument not for the sake of heaven, the argument of Korach v'Adasef, Korach and his community. Right? Adas Korach, the community of Korach. Och and Ve, you know, what kind of a community? A community of arguers. Right? You know, it's a great name for a shul someplace, you know, Adas Korach. But it's such an unusual thing. I mean, unusual. However, it would be so terribly unusual. But the confluence of the different bitter feelings, and they're gathering against Moshe and Aaron. They're gathering against Moshe and Aaron, and we need to try to focus on this and understand with a little bit greater depth what's happening here in this machlokes, in this argument of Korach v'Adasi. Korach, as we said a moment ago, personifies machlokes. He's the one who's associated with it in the Mishnah. The Torah gives a command of Lo Yek Korach v'Chadoso, you shouldn't be like Korach and his community. We have that statement later in our Parsha. And while there's a debate whether it's counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs or not, but it's a warning, Chazal tell us, it's a warning against grabbing, being oiches b'machloikas, you know, being involved in internal strife and dispute and argument. That's what Korach represents. And in a certain sense, you know, it's in his name. Because a Korach, a karachas, is an empty spot. In other words, you have a nice field, and somebody marches through and, you know, chops down part of it. That's a korcha, right? A korcha is a rip, or a space in between, an empty space in a filled area. The Torah uses the term l'yikruchu korcha b'neinechem. What's that referring to? A person has a head of hair, more or less. They're in grief. They tear out some of the hair. So that empty spot is called a korcha, right? It breaks up the wholeness of what's there. It's like tearing a garment, except this on a field or on wherever you have something like that growing, you don't rip it up. What you do is you tear off part of it, and that's called the split. And the term for that is a korcha, a korach. Korach was the split, the argument personified. And he stands up against Moshe and against Aaron. And these two personalities, we have to understand, are the essence of the very opposite of the split. Moshe and Aaron are both great unifiers, but in two very different ways. And because in this parsha, Korach is taking on both Moshe and Aaron, Korach v'Adoso, Korach and his community are taking on both Moshe and Aaron, I think a good place for us to start, as we're studying the first aliyah of this parsha, is understanding how Moshe and Aaron each stood as antithetical to the essence of Korach. Aaron is easy, because the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, in the first chapter of Pirkei Avos, that Hillel said, "Hevemi talmida shel Aaron, oev shalom v'rodev shalom." Hillel said, you should be a student of Aaron, who loved peace and pursued peace, who loved people and brought them close to Torah. So Hillel tells us that Aaron HaKohen was the personification of Shalom, of peace. Why is that? Where do we see that? So in fact, the explanation of that jumps at us from within our own Parsha. The Maharal explains in Pirkei Avos, I've shared it with some of you before, I've shared it many, many times in different frameworks. But what happens here is that Moshe Rabbeinu, as the test of the challenge which was being posed over here to Aaron, so he said, you should take shovels, Korach, and all your community, put in them fire, place on them ktoris before Hashem tomorrow. We'll see who Hashem's, which ktoris Hashem accepts and which he rejects. And Rashi explains, Marua lomar lohem kach. What did he see to say this to them? Omar lohem bedarche agoyim yeshnimusim harbe v'koymrim harbe. In the ways of the nations of the world, there are many manners of conduct, of behavior, and there are many different priests. Ve'in kula miskabtzim v'bayis echad, and they don't assemble in one house. They have all kinds of temples. The idea of monotheism is not present amongst the nations of the world, and without monotheism, there are also, you know, poly-templists, right? They're all over the place with their different priests and their different places of worship and their different methods of worship. Onu ein lanu elo Hashem echad, orein echad, v'toyra achas, u'mizbeach echad, v'koyen gadol echad. Rashi lists off, ticks off five things. We have one God. We have one ark, which was the center point of the Mishkan, of course. We have one Torah, which is in the ark. We have one Mizbeach, one altar, which is the point of service of the Mishkan. And we have one Kohen Gadol. We have one high priest who leads the service for us all. V'atem asayim v'chamishim ish mevakshim kuna gedayla. You have 250 people here who are lining up simultaneously to be the Kohen Gadol. Right, they weren't saying, okay, I'm better than Aaron. No, I'm better than Aaron. No, I'm better than Aaron. They were challenging the whole notion of Kohen Gadol Echad, of one Kohen Gadol. And that's why this was the test. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, the most precious of all of the avodos, of all of the methods of worship, was the Ktoris, which, as we've discussed before. So go ahead, everybody should take the Ktoris, and let's see who Hashem chooses. And that will be the greatest indicator of who's who. That's the idea. Explains the Maral of Prague that here we have it. You know, Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu is bringing out to Korach that what's unique about the Jewish people is that we have one Kohen Gadol functioning within one Migdash that everybody has to be a member of. Right? All the old corny jokes about the desert island notwithstanding, there was one shul. There was one Beis HaMikdash that everybody had to be a member of. Says the Maral, who is going to preside over such a place? It's going to have to be someone who's able to bring everybody together. It doesn't say in the Pasuk that Aaron HaKohen loved peace. It doesn't say in the Pasuk that Aaron HaKohen pursued peace. Hillel says Aaron HaKohen loved peace and pursued peace. Where did he get it from? How did he know it? It was absolutely necessary, because if the job description of Aaron as the Kohen Gadol was to serve over the one place, the one focal point of worship, and he needed everybody, he had to be everybody's Kohen Gadol, he obviously could not be a polarizing figure. He had to be able to bring everybody together. And that was the way of Aaron HaKohen. Ayav Shalom, V'Rayav Shalom. Aaron HaKohen, we're told in Chazal, when he found that people were having disputes with each other, he would go to one and spin to them a tale about how bad the other one felt. Then he would go to the other and spin to them a tale about how bad the first one felt. And Aaron HaKohen would bring them together. He did not confront, he reconciled. That was the method of Aaron HaKohen. That's the form of Shalom, of peace, that Aaron HaKohen was able to bring to the world. And that's why Chazal tell us that at the end of his life, by Aaron HaKohen, it says that he was wept over, he was mourned over by Kol Beis Yisrael, by the entire house of the Jewish people, representing the house as a unified house. Rashi contrasts it, brings what Chazal contrasts it by Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, B'nei Yisrael, but by Aaron HaKohen, who would bring families together as part of his project of bringing all of the Jewish people together, everybody cried over him. But Moshe Rabbeinu, who was Midas Hadin, who was stronger and representing judgment, he didn't have that they all cried over him in the same way, Kol Beis Yisrael. Which brings us to now look at the other aspect of unity, of non-machlekes, the aspect which is represented by Moshe Rabbeinu. We could say that the aspect which is represented by Aaron HaKohen is Avas HaBrios, Shalom, love of people. Shalom as, you know, a value for itself. Why should there be any division between us? Division means, I don't like you. I want to be apart from you. Like when it says in the Mishnah that Aaron was Oeves HaBrios, Umekarvim HaTorah, he loved people and that way brought them close to Torah. What does it say? It says Aaron HaKohen would walk down the street and there was a crook, you know, Yosel the Ganef or whatever it was, who was walking down the street in the opposite direction. And he would see Aaron HaKohen and he would like think, Ayve, Aaron HaKohen. And Aaron HaKohen would see him and he would smile at him and he would say, Shalom Aleichem, Yosel, how are you this morning? And Yosel would say, wow, Aaron HaKohen likes me. And that would mean that the next morning, when Yosel was faced again with temptation of picking somebody else's pocket in the marketplace, he would say, I don't know if I can do that because maybe, you know, in 25 minutes, Aaron HaKohen will come walking down the street like he did yesterday. How am I going to be able to look him in the eye? The way he got the thief to not steal was not by telling him that it was a bad thing to steal. It was not by punishing him for stealing. It was by making him want to be part of the same people that Aaron was a part of. By making him want to feel connection and love from Aaron HaKohen. And therefore, okay, if that's what I have to drop to do that, so therefore that's what I'll have. From Aaron, it's the Ava, the Achva, the Shalem. It's a peace which comes from love and from brotherhood. That's one flavor. Moshe Rabbeinu represents a different flavor. Moshe Rabbeinu was also a creature, a person who unified Klal Yisrael. In fact, one might say that the unity which Moshe Rabbeinu, the foundations of the unity which Moshe Rabbeinu put in place in Klal Yisrael, are arguably much more lasting and much more profound than those that Aaron HaKohen put into Klal Yisrael. Right? If Aaron HaKohen presides over the Beis HaMikdash, well, the Beis HaMikdash is, it's gone in the visible sense. It's been gone for 2 millennia, almost. And we all know, of course, that the second Beis HaMikdash was in fact destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, because of needless hatred or purposeless hatred between people, the very opposite of what Aaron HaKohen stood for. So, you know, to some degree, the legacy of Aaron of the unity of the Jewish people has faded. I mean, we still hold up very strongly. I mean, one of the most well-known and repeated Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos is Hillel's instruction that we should be a student of Aaron who loves and pursues peace. Right? You ask people to say a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos by heart, you know, that'll be a close second to Al Shlosho Devorim Ha'olam Omeid, Al HaTorah V'Al Avodah V'Al Gvilus Chasadim. It's a big deal. And so, Chas V'Sholem, to say that Aaron HaKohen's legacy is lost, but the tangible form of it is not present. Moshe Rabbeinu was also a Ma'achid of Klal Yisrael. And I want to try to explain this using the terminology and the way of thinking and the way of expression, again, of the Maral of Prague. I shared with you the Maral's explanation of why Aaron had to be Oev Shalom or Odev Shalom, and that's a very practical explanation. If you want to be the person to rally all the Jewish people around the single temple as the single Kohen Gadol, you have to be someone, by definition almost, who brings them together. However, Moshe Rabbeinu is a different method, a different path, and a different language, if we might say, language of the Maral of Prague. One of the ideas that the Maral shares about it about Moshe Rabbeinu is that we know that Moshe Rabbeinu had a very distinct relationship to Mayim, to the water. Moshe Rabbeinu was originally named Moshe by Basya, the daughter of Paro, and he's named for Kimin Hamayim Mishisihu, because I drew him from the water. The water was supposed to submerge all of the young of the Jewish people, the young men of the Jewish people, maybe the young men of the whole place, the whole country, who were born because of the concern. Moshe Rabbeinu, sort of, they fulfilled the mitzvah of putting him in the water by putting him in the basket, but then he was rescued from the water, drawn from the water, Kimin Hamayim Mishisihu, by the daughter of Paro. And that's the name that stuck. That's the name that stuck. Chazal say different things about why, specifically the name that the daughter of Paro gave him, of all the names that Moshe Rabbeinu had, his parents gave him a name. Chazal speak of all kinds of names. The name of the daughter of Paro stuck. Some say, I think we mentioned over Shavuos, that there's a Chazal that says because it was, she just did a selfless chesed, and that's the reward of her selfless chesed, that what she, or the imprint of her name, is perpetuated forever in Moshe Rabbeinu. But Lamaisa, in the end, his name is derived from the fact that he was drawn from the water. Paro did what he did because he knew that Moshe Rabbeinu would ultimately, whoever the leader of the Jewish people would be, would, you know, be struck by the water. He would be brought down by the water, as we're going to read in next week's Parsha. The Mei Meriva, the waters of strife, of division. But that was to come much later than Moshe Rabbeinu's birth. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu would have a lifetime in between where he is drawn from the Mayim, where he is drawn from the water. And the question is, what's the significance of that image of Moshe Rabbeinu being drawn from the water? And I'll share with you how the Maral explains it. In the world, we can look at two different I'm missing the word. I don't have the word. Two different dimensions, let's say. It's not the right word. But we have something which is called, which we would refer to as the chomer, as the raw material. The raw material, matter. Right? The example we always give is the ball of clay. The ball of clay here, not because it's formed into a ball to bounce or to throw, just the gob, let's call it that, the blob of clay. And then we have the tzura. The tzura is the shape. You take the ball of clay, and what do? You make from it maybe a dreidel, right? Maybe you make from it a bowl or a cup, whatever it is, right? That, you didn't add anything. It's the chaymer is the clay. But what did you do to the chaymer? What did you do to the raw matter? You gave it a shape. You gave it a form. You gave it a purpose. We call that tzura. There is matter and there is form. Chomer and tzura. Raw matter and then the form and the shape and the direction which it is given. We know, for example, that we don't have the ability to create matter. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, God, when He created the world, He created Yesh Me'ayin. He created matter. He created something from nothing. We now believe, and I say this not as believing Jews, just, but if, you know, the belief of science, one of the laws of science is the law of the conservation of matter. That matter is never created and matter is never destroyed. It just changes from one form or state to another. But the matter is always there. Right, even if you burn something, right, it's transformed into energy and it somehow remains there within the world. Don't ask me too many science questions. I'm teaching you from a sixth grade level. Just kidding. But that's the basic principle. Bria, creation, is the rest of the time, even in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Sheshes Yemei Bereshis, even in the 6 days of creation, we understand that the rest of the days are what we call Yetzira, right? Not Bria, not creation, but Yetzira, formation, which is the step afterwards. Okay, there's a further step we call Asiya, which is finishing it. Now, when you would take that bowl that you formed from the clay, you would put it in the kiln, and you bake it, so then it's finished, right? So that's a further stage. But that's locking in to whatever degree the tzura, the shape that you have given it. The quintessential chomer suggests the Maral. The ultimate example of something which is chomer, which is raw matter without shape or form, is water. Liquids, really. Why? But especially water. Why? Because when I was introducing you to the clay, I had to explain to you that when I said a ball of clay, I didn't really mean a ball of clay. Mm-hmm. I meant a blob of clay, because sometimes people make things into balls already, and you know that's already significant, right? A ball of the blob, so it's a cube, it's a shape, it's a form. It has some shape of its own. Water has absolutely no shape of its own. Water takes on the shape of whatever vessel it happens to be in. And, you know, if you pour it out of the vessel, it just, you know, it dissipates altogether. It has no tzura. And so, in a certain sense, it's the quintessential chomer. And explains the Maharal, that Moshe Rabbeinu was pulled out of the water. Just like, in a certain sense, he was pulled out of Mitzrayim, which we're not going to get into the details of that right now, but Mitzrayim is also considered to be the ultimate in Chaymeh Hashir Bissar Chamoirim Bissaram. The Pasuk refers to Mitzrayim as Chaym Chamor. They're like the donkey. The term for a donkey is also, you know, Chamor, Chaymeh. The donkey is quote unquote the dumb animal, you know, that you just you know, you put something on it and you get it to march. It doesn't have, you know, direction, so to speak, or personality. But Moshe Rabbeinu was pulled out of that. Pulled out of the chomer of water, pulled out of the chomer of Mitzrayim. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Maharal, was the ultimate in tzura. He was the ultimate in structure and form. Because what Moshe Rabbeinu did in his life was he came to the Jewish people to give us a direction, to give us purpose. We're here in Mitzrayim. We're enslaved. We have no personal direction. When the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, in a certain sense, we were like water in a cup. Why? Because that's what every Eved, that's what every slave is. A slave has no self, has no agenda, has no mission or ideals that he lives by. The master tells him what he does, and he does it. The Eved is like chomer in the hands of the Yotzer, in the hands of the Master, excuse me. When you have Yetziah, when you have an exodus, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes and frees us from the slavery of Mitzrayim, and instead gives us, in place of being slaves to Mitzrayim, gives us the Torah, and its mitzvahs, and that becomes the direction of the Jewish people. And remember, it's not imposed on us from the outside like the Avdus of Mitzrayim. Remember again what the Mishnah says, or the Braisa, in the 6th chapter of Pirkei Avos, that Ein Lecha Ben Chayrin Ela Mishayisk B'Taira. There's no one who is free as the one who is involved in Taira. And I've shared with some of you before that Rav Huttner's brilliant, beautiful, beautiful insight. Where do Chazal learn that from? That the greatest, the freest person is the person who's involved in the Torah. They learn it from the fact that it says that the writing was charus al haluchos. The inscription was engraved upon the luchos. The word used is charus, and charus is the same letters as cherus, which is freedom. And Rav Huttner said that when you have writing engraved in stone, the writing isn't separate from the stone. Like when you write something on a sefer Torah, on a piece of parchment, you have ink and you impose it on the parchment. one day the ink starts to get old and it starts to get flaky and it's gone. And the parchment ends up being blank, you know, with like a few faint stains on it. The carving on a stone never rubs out. Right? It's part of it. It's part of it. And that's the chayrus, that what's meant when HaKadosh Baruch Hu say when a person's involved in Torah, they have chayrus. Because what they're doing is they're gaining in a direction of their own, not an imposed direction. Like a master imposes upon a slave. But they're given their own direction. And Moshe Rabbeinu did that. Moshe Rabbeinu, who came down with the Torah and gave Torah to the Jewish people, he gave us the means for the raw matter, what we call, what's called elsewhere, the bekoach, the potential of the Jewish people, and he gave it its direction, its bepoel, its ability to become active and full and realized. That's the koach of Moshe Rabbeinu. And go one more step, because you'll say to me, okay, so Chomer and Surah, but why are we talking about that tonight? But explains the Maharal that ultimately Surah, purpose is the great unifier. Surah is the great unifier. Why? So let's go back to our example of the clay ball. So you have a ball or a blob of clay. Yeah? Say, okay, I want you to make that into a cup. Fine, I'm really happy to make it into a cup. Before I give it to you to make it into a cup, I reach into the blob and I take out, a little fistful of the clay. So here's the rest of the blob. Go ahead, make a cup. Will you be able to make a cup? Of course you make a cup. Instead of it being an 8-ounce cup, maybe it'll be a 7-ounce cup. But you'll still be able to make a cup. The chomer, a little more, a little less, take away a little, it doesn't matter. But let's try this. I say, here is the blob of clay, the full blob of clay. Make a cup, and you make a cup. And then I go, and I take the cup. So just give me 1 second, and I take away the same fistful or fingerful from the cup. In fact, I don't even take that. I take a little tiny bit from the cup. And what happened? I damaged the cup. Because when you give tzura, when you give shape, you take it from being a bunch of matter to being something which is bound together and has a unified purpose, of which every single piece and component has a place, has a part, and has a role. When you're just the raw matter without direction, something can disappear and no one will really notice. It won't necessarily make a difference because it's shapeless. Are there more? Are there less? But when it's structured, when it's purposeful, when the purpose has defined it, the tzura takes the disparate ingredients or pieces or volume of the chomer, of the matter, and brings it together for a singular purpose. And that's why, says the Maharal, that's part of it, is that what Moshe Rabbeinu does, you know, when you have that water, which is shapeless, right, it spills out all over the place. But what the Torah, the Maharal writes sometimes that a melech has that job of bringing together the people. Moshe Rabbeinu is also called the melech. But especially in the giving of Torah, which is really Tzuras Yisrael, which gives us our sense of direction and purpose and something for the entire people to rally around. That is a great unifier of the Jewish people. It's an ironic unifier. It's an ironic unifier in the sense that, you know, when you come to Torah, you come to Din. And the Russia who walked past Moshe Rabbeinu in the street didn't get a, hey, how you doing, Yasala? That he got from Aaron HaKohen. He got Din. He got a presumably the more stern face of judgment. While Aaron HaKohen was fudging the truth and saying, "Oh, this person really feels bad about having offended you." And it goes to the other one, says, "That person really feels bad about having." In order to be able to bring people together, Moshe Rabbeinu did not do that. Moshe Rabbeinu said the truth, and the truth was sometimes something which, as happens in the case of litigants who are arguing with each other, there's a winner and there's a loser, and there's someone who is right and there's someone who is wrong. And in a certain sense, din, judgment, divides people from each other. But in another sense, of course, fidelity to din actually unifies people with each other in perhaps a more profound way. Perhaps a more profound way than the smiles and the warmth of peacefulness. Because it's a unity which is bound together by purpose. It's a unity which is bound together as the bonding quality of tzura, of a direction which the people assume. Moshe and Aaron were, excuse the expression, the dynamic duo that led the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu with Din and Aaron HaKohen with Shaul. Aaron HaKohen, as much as he was the one to, so to speak, one might say, excuse again, to mediate the relationship between Kol Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the shliach, the emissary of the Jewish people to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people, to opinions in the Gemara, Shulchei Didan, Shulchei Derachmana. But at the same time, the groundwork of Aaron HaKohen was to unify the Jewish people, the Derech HaSholem, to hold us together with love for each other, and so on and so forth. The grounds for the bringing together was that. And what would threaten it would be machlokes, argument, that came from, you know, selfishness as opposed to a concern of others, for others. Like the person of shalom, the person of peace, is a person of humility, person who's not self-centered. We all understand that to some degree when Hillel teaches Havemi Talmido Shel Aaron, it's part of the personality of Hillel, who was humble and embracing of people. And that's what's going on over here as well with Aaron HaKohen. And you know, that was his task, to unify the people, and they could then serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Moshe Rabbeinu, the peace which Moshe Rabbeinu brought to the Jewish people, was not by working within the people. It was by bringing that, being that agent from above, unifying the Jewish people around a higher purpose. Unifying the Jewish people around a single Torah, a single set of values that becomes our constitution. And, you know, law, a system of law, belief in law, is a great unifier. It doesn't, you know, law, again, can preside over great divisions between the winners and losers, the people who are on the right side, people who are on the wrong side, the people, you know, between the warden and the prisoner, right? There's a great gap. But in a certain sense, when you walk into the prison and you have the judge and the warden and the prisoner, they're all where they are, assigned their place by a single entity, and that entity is the value of the law, which they all subscribe to, whether they end up on the right or the wrong side of it. That was, in a sense, the achdus which Moshe Rabbeinu brings to the mix over here, Moshe and Aaron, and both of them are at odds with Korach, with Korach of the Adosai, with Korach and his community. Now, what's the essence of Korach's dispute? Is the essence of Korach's dispute the self-serving, not being considerate of others, that we would see as the argument against Aaron HaKohen? Now, the opposite of a Ben Adam L'Chaveray, on the one hand, On the other hand, of course, Korach is challenging Moshe Rabbeinu's word. We all heard at Har Sinai. We're all Nevi'im. Korach was challenging the veracity of the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Rambam writes about the absolute clarity of the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, the proof he brings is from what Moshe Rabbeinu said to Korach and what happened to Korach. This was the story, in a certain sense, to show with absolute clarity that the word of Moshe Rabbeinu was true. And so, on that level, what we're having here is the affirmation of that specific piece, of the truth of Moshe Rabbeinu, of the uniqueness of the voice of Moshe Rabbeinu, of a Torah achas, of a single method of determining that which is right and that which is wrong, which Moshe Rabbeinu brings, which is the critical glue to unify the Jewish people. And if we could say that, you know, we said before that Moshe Rabbeinu's legacy in a certain sense is more durable than the legacy of Aaron HaKohen, and that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed in a spasm of Sinas Chinam, which continues throughout the generations, and we don't have that, but the Torah still stands. But we also recognize that the extent to which Korach has heirs, to the extent to which the eternity and the veracity and the universal meaning, you know, in any time and place, applicability of Torah Moshe and Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu, to the extent that throughout the generations we have people who have challenged that, whether it was the Kitim, the groups like the Tzedukim, the Sadducees, or the Karoim, the Karaites, or movements which we've had over the past couple of hundred years and to this day that challenge the truth and the eternal truth of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, have created the greatest division, the greatest split that exists within the Jewish people. You know, I think it's very, very interesting and worthwhile to note that the term for a heretic in Hebrew is a min. Right? People who daven Nusach Svar say it in the Shemoneh Esrei. V'chol haminim kerega yevedu. The minim should be out of the picture. Min. Now, what else does min mean? Sorry about that. Min means a type, a species, right? Liminehu. Each one. Hashem said, let the land produce kinds of grass. Liminehu, all kinds, right? Animals. Nefesh chaya. Liminehu. Each species, each kind. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari explains that the reason why heretics are called minim is because Torah, fidelity to Torah, produces a single truth in that sense. Yes, we have machlekes, you know, sort of like within Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, but we essentially have one line. And when you reject the Nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu, what you end up with is minim, 31 flavors. 31 flavors. So we term them as, you know, this kind, that kind. It's the antithesis of Torah Achas, or Mishpat Echad Yelochem, and that the unity of Torah is reflected, in the unity of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people. This is a unity of principle, which is fundamentally different than just a unity of midas tavis, than a unity of, you know, we care for each other and we're not self-centered. And Korach v'Adoso, in the sense, are the you know, the models, in a certain sense, the paradigm of the challenge to them, to them both. The challenge to them both. The division into these two ideas of what unifies the Jewish people is something which is worth following and considering as you go through the parsha, because the parsha has again the many dynamics that we spoke about before. We have the Levim and their challenge, and we have the Bechirim and and theirs, we don't have the time now really have to chart the course all the way through. We have the different levels of proof, the swallowing up from the ground, the different things that occur to sort of settle this machlokes, to sort of settle the differences between them. But what I would want to just bring out here is the following. In Chazal, in the words of the Medrash, they see machlokes, they see argument as something which came into the world at a certain point in time. When? On day two of creation. The first day was Yom Echad. One day. It doesn't even say Yom Rishon, the first day. Right? All the other days, the second day, the third day, Yom Sheni. The first day doesn't say Yom Rishon. It says Yom Echad. One day. There was nothing else. There was, Rashi brings, Hashem was Yochid B'Olama, he was the only one in his world. But it's more than that. Because what we find on the second day, which is the day that it says no mention that it was good. Every other day of creation, it says Hashem saw that it was good, Hashem saw that it was good. What Hashem did on the second day, it doesn't say that it was good. And what he did on the second day was Hashem said, Yihi rakia b'sei chamayim, there should be a barrier within the water, Yihi mavdil, and it should divide between mayim l'mayim, between the waters above and the waters below. And the Gemara and Chazal and the Medrash say that you see on the second day Hashem created something which is a divider. Yeah, on the first day Hashem created the light, and he divided between the light and the darkness, but he didn't create a divider. On the second day he created a divider. And not only did he create a divider, but he created a gap in the world between heaven and earth. He separated the earth from the heavens. Chazal say it was on the same second day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Gehenna. Because Gehenna, we picture it as being some deep hole in the ground, of whatever else it is, the place where Korach was swallowed up alive, right? Is Pischa Shel Gehenna in the language of the Gemara, in the language of Chazal, but that is the farthest place away, so to speak, from the heavens. The most divided. How could it be? How could it be further away? And the second day, therefore, in a certain sense, creates this division, this ability to separate between heaven and earth. And that's where Korach, so to speak, is born. That's where Korach steps in. The division between heaven and earth is something which was explicitly, almost, we might say, bridged on a different day. And that was the day when Moshe Rabbeinu presided over the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people. Everybody heard it. Chazal tell us that on the second day, on the day of the giving of the Torah, Hashem lowered the heavens onto the earth, onto Har Sinai. Kirchim, he lowered the heavens onto the mountain. In a certain sense, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing was he was bringing his presence into the world. Moshe Rabbeinu is described as going up to heaven to get the Torah, speaking to the angels, coming back down. The bridge between heaven and earth was formed there. And the way that bridge was built, you know, with all the drama of the clouds and the fire and everything else, the way that bridge was built to last was by what we came away from Har Sinai with. Har Sinai also didn't last forever as an experience, as clouds and fire, as the voice of Hashem in its thunderous quality. But what did last forever from Har Sinai was the Torah that was given to us. Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. That is what brought the heaven down to the earth. And it is that, the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that comes down here, that we live by, is that makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu present in this world, like the Ribbono Shel Olam is in the heavens. And it is that word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we bring down from our Sinai, that ultimately is that which unifies, which counters the whole idea, the narrative of Kairach, of Machloikas. Because there's something here that brings everybody together. It is interesting and important to think about that when Moshe Rabbeinu addresses Korach, he says, Shimuna b'nei Levi, listen to me, you who are the children of Levi. These children of Levi, these people who are planting the seeds of argument and of division, Moshe Rabbeinu tries to calm them and stop their argument. And what does he say? Hama'at mikem, is it small to you? Ki hivdil Hashem Elokei Yisrael Eschem, Ki hivdil Elokei Yisrael Eschem, that the God of Israel divided you, separated you, that word, Havdalah, Me'adas Yisrael from the rest of the community of Israel, Lakriv Eschem Elov, to bring you close to Him, La'avodes Avodas Mishkan Hashem, La'amod Lifnei Vayidol L'Shorsam, to serve in the Mishkan, to stand before the community, to serve them. He brought you and your brothers, the Bnei Levi, with you, Uvikashtem Gam Kuhuna, you also want to be the Kohanim. It's a remarkable thing. These are people of argument, these are people of division. And Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Hashem did divide you. You have your division. You're Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi is divided from everybody else. And we talked about it a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, right? About, you know, the ring of Shevet Levi that's immediately around the Mishkan. And that Shevet Levi is to some degree separated from the material world. Right? Huvdal, Midarkei Ha'olam, they're separated from the ways of the world. In a certain sense, Shevet Levi is division. And I thought Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Kairach, you know, that's not enough. No, I'm tempted to just stop and leave this with you to some degree as something for you to think about as a question. I think it's a very, very rich question and a very, very rich irony. But we understand that to some degree, Shevet Levi did have to be separated from the world. The same for the very, in the very same way that on the second day of creation, Hashem separated the heavens from the earth. That, yeah, in a certain sense, there has to be something apart. But that which holds it apart is so that it can maintain its perfect, integrity. Shevet Levi is separated from the ways of the world so that its ideas, its commitment to the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah remains pure and unaltered. In a certain sense, that's where it has to be, that's where it has to go. And it is that, when we have that purity of vision, that we're able to somehow unify around it. It becomes a pure and clear set of ideals that hold the Jewish people together. And to some degree, yes, it has to be separate. But the separation of Shevet Levi that leads them to be on a higher spot on the mountain, when Korach is fighting, he's fighting for a separation that ends up being swallowed up into the earth below. And what we ultimately seek as the B'nai Israel, to be able to unify ourselves, is not by leveling the playing field and by making everybody the same, which is the democratic notion that Korach tries to put forth, that we're all Kedoshim and we're therefore all the same, and therefore that's what's going to unify us. You know, whether we're right or we're wrong, or whether we're Shoyim or whether we're Tzadikim. In a certain sense, as Moshe Rabbeinu takes the leadership role, you know, against Korach, understanding that even his attack on Aaron at its core was an accusation against Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu had not said the truth. He said that what will ultimately unify the Jewish people is when we realize that there is something that's separate and apart. When you realize that the word of Moshe Rabbeinu cannot be equated to the word of anybody else, and therefore it has this absolute truth to it, this absolute veracity to it. And Korach, if you will find your place in lifting yourselves up and bringing yourselves out from the plain and the simple, which is the task of Shevet Levi, you will be contributing to that separation to a higher ideal, which will ultimately unify, a havdalah, a division for the sake of unification. But that wasn't Korach. That wasn't Korach. It wasn't Korach. Probably, and again, you can probe it and study it, and maybe we'll have a chance to discuss it sometime in the progression of the parsha, because he was also infected with the anti-Aaron problem. And that would not allow for that. I hope that this outline, these thoughts, can perhaps give you some food for further thought about the different ways that we come together, the different ways that we unify. You know, it's a time of miserable machlokes, miserable division in the world in general. And Klal Yisrael is not at all immune to it. Maybe the opposite. Maybe it's our own division that has contributed to the division of the world. We take responsibility that way as Klal Yisrael with our special job. And so thinking about the dimensions of Achdus, the dimension of Bein Adam L'Chaverei, but also the dimension of commitment to a unified vision of principle. Something for us, I think, to consider. And in order to be able to advance the Shalom, we have to work both on the Avas Habriyos, on love of other people, as well on the treasure ring of pure principle, a principle that can unify, a respect for a loftier principle than, you know, just that which can be debated and discussed and politicized. May we be zeicher that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be Ezus Hashem, bless us with His light, and we should be blessed through that as well with His Shalom. Baruchenu Avinu Kulanu Ke'echad B'yar Panecha. Bless us, Hashem, we say, by the light of Your face, because by the light of Your face You gave us Tiras Chayim, V'Avas Chesed, Utztako V'Rachav Rachim V'Chayim, V'Shalom. From Torah to Shalom. From the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's face. From Moshe Rabbeinu to Aaron HaKohen. The two visions of how we can unify the Jewish people that have to merge together. Good evening.